From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. The ongoing partial federal government shutdown would have been the top national political story today, but the New York Times reporting of a counterintelligence investigation against President Trump is getting even more attention. When has the question been asked? Could the U.S. president be working with Russia against national security? That's where we are going to start with Ken Rudin today. He is the political junkie. He's joining us, as he does nearly every week, from Washington, D.C. Hi, Ken. This is a conversation, though, that we have not ever had before.
I woke up Saturday, looked at the front page. Good morning, Beth. I woke up Saturday, looked at the front page of the New York Times, and the headline said, FBI investigated if Trump worked for the Russians. The thought of that, I remember, but Robert Welch, who was the head of the John Birch Society back in the 1950s, he called President Eisenhower a conscious, dedicated agent of the communist, a conscious, dedicated agent of the communist conspiracy. Huh. But that was Robert Welch and the John Birch Society, which, of course, everybody was a communist to them. But to hear, to see that the FBI is investigating whether the president of the United States is working for Russia against American interests, if you ever wonder why there's a Robert Mueller investigation, I mean, this is a perfect example why. It is unheard of in ever, and it's just absolutely remarkable.
So maybe nothing will come of that, but what's the impact of, as you said, waking up and seeing that headline, of the fact that this is the prevailing story, of the fact that there's even the suggestion that the president of the United States has undermined national security?
Well, I mean, I think that is part of the Mueller investigation, the fact that you have Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign chairman, who his lawyers inadvertently revealed that he leaked polling information to people associated with Russian intelligence figures back during the 2016 campaign. I mean, basically, that's what Mueller is doing. Trump could talk about no collusion all you want, but when you have Manafort releasing poll data to the Russians, when you have Donald Trump Jr. and Manafort and Jared Kushner meeting at Trump Tower with a woman alleged to have links to the Kremlin offering dirt on Hillary Clinton. I mean, if I looked in the dictionary, to me, that looks like the word, what the definition of collusion is. And so I don't know how close we are to hearing from Robert Mueller. I suspect we're closer than we have been. And I think the reason I think it might be close is because Rod Rosenstein had announced that he's going to be leaving soon. I don't think he would leave soon if that weren't the case. But I think this is all part of the case that the special counsel, Robert Mueller, is trying to bring against Trump and people associated with him.
I do want to get back to what the New York Times said, and that was that there were two investigations happening. Now, we know about the criminal investigation that had to do with the firing of FBI Director James Comey, and that was regarding obstruction of justice. This new aspect is the counterintelligence elements. Now, they were all rolled into one investigation, but let's spend a little bit more time on the difference, on this counterintelligence aspect of what the FBI was looking at.
Well, I mean, to my best of my understanding of it, there were people associated with the president, like Carter Page, like perhaps Manafort, who had ties with pro-Russian people in Ukraine, that people who worked for him were basically doing Putin's bidding. And, you know, when we saw that famous scene in Helsinki, when the president's standing next to Putin, and he says, and basically he's asked whether he believes his own intelligence agencies or he believes Putin. I mean, so, and he said, well, Putin wouldn't, you know, didn't lie. I don't think he lied to me. These are the kind of questions we've heard for at least the 2 years he's been president, and perhaps sometime before, that he seems to go out of his way not to disparage Putin and what the Russians are doing, and more disparaging of U.S. allies and Republicans in Congress and Democrats in Congress. So I mean, whether there's a difference between a political investigation or an actual intelligence investigation, it seems like the target is the same thing, whether he did act to subvert American... Look, anybody who says we should, you know, I'm not a fan of NATO, and we should end these alliances, and they're not working with France, Germany, and Britain, but he wants to have closer relationships with Russia. I mean, I don't know what you want to call it, but it certainly seems like the president is offering a different agenda than any other president has ever offered.
The New York Times reports in the article, Ken, that no evidence has emerged publicly that Mr. Trump was secretly in contact with or took direction from Russian government officials. That's correct. I read directly from the story. And there was no comment from an FBI spokeswoman or a spokesman for the special counsel's office on this. So we are left with a lot of questions. Part of the story surrounding this, the ripple effect of all of this, is that there's been discussion about whether the president wanted to take control of and or destroy notes from translators in his meeting with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. Also, we should talk about the new attorney general and whether the possibility of recusement might emerge with him.
Well, I assume you're talking about William Barr, whose confirmation hearings begin tomorrow. With a Republican majority in the Senate, it's very unlikely that he will be denied confirmation. But having said that, it was reported that Donald Trump asked Barr, who was the Attorney General under the first President Bush, he asked Barr to represent him as his attorney to defend him against the Russian investigation. So if you're going to ask William Barr to defend you against charges about cozying up to Russia, and then you appoint him as Attorney General, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, look, I don't know if he will recuse himself. I don't know if he would do what Jeff Sessions did. But my goodness, you know that the Democrats will ask questions during the confirmation hearing. So wait a second. If Trump wanted you to defend him against the charges about conspiring with Russia, how could you be a fair and independent attorney general? We will watch those questions and those answers very carefully when the confirmation hearings begin tomorrow.
The president repeated over and over that Jeff Sessions didn't inform him, the president, in advance about the recusement. So I do wonder whether that kind of conversation is ongoing now in this case, whether they're talking about it in advance.
Well, I assume, I mean, look, I assume that the president knows exactly what Barr has, what Barr's background is and what relationship he has with all of this. So I think he knows what he's getting, but I suspect he knew what he was getting with Sessions as well. I don't think he knew that Sessions would recuse himself, which seemed to be the right thing to do. But as you say, once Sessions recused himself, Comey and appointed Rod Rosenstein, and that began the whole special counsel of Robert Mueller. So it had unintended consequences. I think he's getting a more certain ally in William Barr, but the Democrats may have something to say about that.
I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. He is in the Washington, D.C. area under a blanket of white. You had quite a big snowstorm over the last night plus, correct?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Trump's racial policies. No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't make jokes like that. Yes,
ooh.
10 inches or more of snow. It's gorgeous from the window, but it's not so gorgeous when you're on the road. And I didn't mean to throw out a silly racial comment about the blanket of white, but it reminds me of what's going on with Steve King, the congressman from Iowa, the Republican congressman from Iowa, who once again talked about, you know, white integrity and white, you know, he talked about all that stuff that is basically racially insensitive that the Republicans are having a fit with.
It's not that I'm going to help you out of what you just said, Ken, but let's expand on that a little bit, because Steve King represents Iowa's 6th District. And he did say that phrases like white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? That was part of his quote. So Let's go to some of the exchange with California Congressman Kevin McCarthy, who was the House Majority Leader, now the House Minority Leader. He is a Republican. Let's listen to a little bit of the exchange on Face the Nation, and you'll hear McCarthy first.
That language has no place in America. That is not the America I know, and it's most definitely not the party of Lincoln.
Should he be punished for it?
I have a scheduled meeting with him on Monday, and I will tell you this. I've watched on the other side that they do not take action when their members say something like this. Action will be taken. I'm having a serious conversation with Congressman Steve King on his future and role in this Republican Party.
So that's Congressman McCarthy. Representative Steve Scalise from Louisiana added that he imagines that House Republicans are going to continue talking about taking action against Steve King. Comments like that from Steve King are not new, but wouldn't you say, Ken, that this attention on those comments is at a different level?
Yes, and first of all, let me just say one thing. I'm not going to get into a fight with you. Of course, I would never get in a fight with you, but you don't have to bail me out of a comment like that, because just yesterday, Donald Trump tweeted something that quoted a Pat Buchanan from a Pat Buchanan column talking about white genocide. The fact is, there have been these dog whistles to white supremacy going on quite some time. So that silly joke about white snow, you shouldn't joke about any kind of racial controversies, but there's no question that there are these whistles from the president, from Steve King, from others in the Republican Party. The question is, yes, it's very nice for Kevin McCarthy now in the minority to talk about, well, action will be taken against Steve King, and maybe, you know, they'll review some of his committee assignments. But Steve King has been saying this for quite some time, and when the Republicans were in the majority, aside from very, very few Republicans, no Republican in power stood up and said Steve King has got to cease and desist. Now, what Steve King said about white nationalism and white supremacy is crossing a line, but there are some people who think that he's been crossing a line for some time, and this is a little bit too little and perhaps too late for the Republicans to suddenly realize that Steve King says offensive language.
And the reason they're talking about those discussions beginning today is that Congress is coming back later today. I think a lot of the government is shut down because of the weather. Of course, we're under this partial government shutdown anyway, but Congress returning to the Hill, I guess I'm confused about how much work is actually going to happen there today.
Well, it's not even because of the shutdown. It's because, I mean, basically, it seems like everybody's on hold because of the shutdown. The fact is, the Republican Senate majority, especially led by Mitch McConnell, is doing basically everything they can to stay out of it. Mitch McConnell says, I want, you know, it's between the President Trump and the Democrats, which is kind of interesting. But I think in defense of Mitch McConnell, I think one of the reasons McConnell doesn't want to get involved is I don't think he really knows what President Trump wants or what he believes in, because sometimes Trump will say something on the shutdown, for example, about Dreamers or DACA or something like that. He'll say it on one day, and then the next day he'll say something completely different. So maybe some Republicans are waiting for the Trump versus Trump debate to be resolved before Mitch McConnell gets involved. But right now, look, in last month, the Republican Senate, led Senate voted unanimously. It was a voice vote, basically to reopen the government and temporarily fund it through February. And 2 days later, Trump, who had given his okay to that vote, suddenly changed his mind because he was hearing from Republican conservatives saying he was selling out the conservative cause. So, you know, it's hard for Mitch McConnell to know what Trump wants. And that's one of the reasons I think he's just staying quiet for now.
Let me add Senator Lindsey Graham's comments to this discussion, because he had said previously, Mr. President, declare a national emergency now, build a wall now. But let's listen to what Lindsey Graham said on Fox News over the weekend.
Before he pulls the plug on the legislative option, and I think we're almost there, I would urge him to open up the government for a short period of time, like 3 weeks, before he pulls the plug, see if we can get a deal. If we can, at the end of 3 weeks, all bets are off. See if he can do it by himself through the emergency powers.
All right, so that's a signal that the doors are opening on how can we navigate some ending here that maybe, what, is something for each side?
Well, it's my understanding that Trump disavowed what Lindsey Graham said over the weekend. I think Trump said, sorry, that's a non-starter. He's not going to, temporarily open the government. So he's not doing that. So even somebody like Lindsey Graham, who has become a steadfast Trump defender, when he's dismissed by the president, it's hard to see anything, anybody changing the president's mind unless the Democrats caved in completely and gave him his $5.7 billion for the wall.
And one more regional connection to that, I think this is happening across the country, as the president has suggested that there could be funding for other arenas like flood control protection in the Sacramento arena that could be pulled for border control efforts or building of the wall. That has set a lot of consternation, agitation in motion. Congresswoman Doris Matsui, among others, press releasing and blasting the president for those comments, saying that it's unconscionable that, in this case, Sacramento's flood protection funding would be taken away to build the border wall. I think that's another thing the president is dealing with in terms of members of Congress dealing with their constituencies in these proposals.
Well, I wonder if it's a slap at California, and maybe it's like a, well, Nancy Pelosi, you want to stand up to me? I'll take away this this fire funding. But basically, he's endangering a lot of states like Texas, like Florida, like Puerto Rico, for their kind of trying to recover from the traumas that all these areas did. But look, he is single-minded from the moment he announced his candidacy. He is single-minded, deciding that border security and the border wall is all important. He tried the gambit that Mexico will pay for it. Obviously, that was going nowhere. And now he's saying that Congress should pay for it. And if that goes nowhere, you know, I could see him using these emergency powers. But the fact that he will single out, I mean, in the scheme of things, is $5.6 billion that much money that you have to pull away from flood control and fire control and rescue efforts? I mean, that just sounds more petulant and more punitive than anything else. But I don't know how else to describe it.
A few more comments with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, on this Monday. Looks like California Senator Kamala Harris is going to jump into the presidential race. It's not final, but I'm seeing that she is planning a stop in Columbia, South Carolina at the end of this month. That's an early nominating state. So when that becomes official, it won't be any surprise, will it?
No, I don't think it'll be a surprise. Look, very few freshman senators write books, and if they're not planning to run for president, she has a new book out, The Truths We Hold,
yes.
And she's on a nationwide book tour right now. And the expectation with more and more this is going to be a gigantic field, maybe the biggest since, 1984, 1976, whatever. It's going to be double digits. And so I kind of think that you wait, you snooze, you lose. And with a whole bunch of people either already announcing or people announcing exploratory committees, Elizabeth Warren has an exploratory committee, Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii, said she, on CNN this weekend, that she's going to announce this week. Julian Castro, the former San Antonio mayor, announced his candidacy over the weekend. There's going to be so many, and I guess this is the time to do it. It's a year to go. Next month will be 1 year to Iowa caucuses. And, sometimes Iowa, doesn't matter if you win in Iowa, that won't guarantee anything, but a loss can set you back. And so when the fact is that, given the fact that there's a large a large minority population in South Carolina, the fact that there's a large liberal constituency in Iowa, it only makes sense that Kamala Harris will announce sooner than later. It's my understanding that it will be in January. I mean, who knows? But it's my guess that she does announce before the end of the month. But she's going to join a very, very large field.
A lot of speculation that it'll be surrounding the Martin Luther King weekend with a holiday, and that's coming up this next weekend. So just a quick answer to this, Ken. Do you think a number of these people are jumping in right now with their real goal being 2024, not 2020?
That's always a question, either 2024 or maybe becoming vice president on the ticket. Who knows? But I kind of think that with no obvious front runner, we don't know what Joe Biden is doing. We don't know what Beto O'Rourke is doing. With no obvious front runner, it can hurt to get into the mix. And you're absolutely right. Either positioning themselves for 2024 or getting on the ticket as VP.
Okay, final question. Are you keeping your eye on the moves and the announcements by California's new governor, Gavin Newsom? We had a budget message last week, and there were going to be a lot of indicators about how this governor was going to govern compared to Jerry Brown based on that budget announcement.
This is fascinating. I mean, Jerry Brown, it's a great topic. We've talked about this so much on your show that Jerry Brown has done. It was very, very careful. That probably infuriated a lot of liberals that he did not want a big spending push, even though he did get California into the positive territory, you know, a surplus. And he's very proud of that. He and people like him may be a little nervous about Newsom wanting to spend more than Jerry Brown would have liked to have done. It'll be interesting to see the differences between, just because they're two Democrats, and you know, Democrats don't always succeed themselves in California. I think that hasn't happened in over 100 years,
right,
that a Democratic governor succeeded a Democratic governor. But it'll be very interesting to see the difference in style and policies, and certainly spending proclivities, between Newsom and Brown.
Well, his budget projects a $21.4 billion surplus at this point, a 4% spending increase. So, okay, that's another story to be continued, as with almost everything we talked about in these last 20 minutes. All right. Thank you, Ken. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Beth. I'm sure things will be crazier next week.
All right. That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and you're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.